Welcome to the podcast for Scotty's Blog. I'm your host, Scott Ewart. With me on the show today is candidate for the Howard County Board of Education in District 5 in 2020, Cindy Valancourt. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Cindy, why don't you take a couple of minutes and let the listeners know a little bit about you, your background, and why you're running for Board of Education in 2020.
Okay, well, about 20-some years ago, my family and I moved here to Howard County. My husband's job made it such that we could move to really anywhere in the country. And we knew at the time that we had a gifted child and a child with special needs. And we discovered that it's unusual for a school district to do both things well. We found lots of districts that did regular and gifted education in a great way. And we found a lot that did special ed in a great way. But you know, to have the combination of the two was really unique to Howard County. And when we moved here, we were not disappointed. My son, who was on the autism spectrum, still is, got tremendous services and thrived and is now a college graduate with a bright future. The way I got involved in Board of Ed stuff was that people would come up to me and call me and track me down and ask, how did you get this for your son? How did you get that for your son? You know, how did you cure him? And I came to realize that not everyone was having the same experience with the special education department as we were. And that sort of grew as I was helping people advocate for their kids and work their way through the special education process. And I became more and more aware of things that were, you know, a little odd in the school system. So I ran for the board in 2010 and was elected and served for two terms and chose not to run again in 2018, largely because for a couple of reasons. One is that I had committed to only doing two terms because I really don't think that people should make a lifetime appointment out of the Board of Education. But also because I thought we were on a good footing, and my personal experience and that watching others who came on the board told me that it takes a good year or two to really become well-versed in the processes and the laws and all of what goes into running the school system, and that in 2018 would be a good time for lots of new people to come on and get acclimated before some new big things were on the horizon. I've just was really disappointed to watch for the last year. I thought we were on a good footing, but it really didn't take long for a lot of what I thought we had fixed and put into place to just revert back to some old habits that I don't like and that I don't consider to be productive and consumer, student, parent, family, community friendly. And so knowing that the next board, the board that gets seated in 2020, is going to be faced with three very big deals, one being redistricting again to open the new high school, provided it doesn't get derailed right now because of the crisis that we're all in. Two, there's going to be the decision on whether or not to renew the current superintendent. And if the decision is to not renew, then to choose a new one. And the third is the ongoing budget crisis. So I think that I was thinking about this earlier. When I was a little kid, I remember thinking my parents had like all this magical information. They knew their times tables, and in specifically, I remember, you know, driving down the road and they would say, oh, that's a Buick or that's a Ford. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I'll never know that kind of stuff. And then you find out as you grow up that, you know, experience teaches you a lot. And some of this stuff just becomes, you know, natural. You can identify these things and you memorized your timetables and now it's all, you know, rote. But this new board, in particular, the board coming in 2020, is not going to have the luxury of the year or two it takes to really get acclimated. before these big decisions that are so crucial to our whole community hit. And I think I left some business undone when I left, and I would like to make sure that some of the good things that we were heading toward happen and nip some of the recurrence of the bad things in the bud. So that's why I'm running now.
Excellent. Well, yeah, you did serve on a pretty difficult time for the school system and the board. Trust me, I remember writing about it regularly back then. So great. So let's hop into the questions. And you touched on some of them right away. So some of the questions I have are some of the things that you noted. But I'm going to start with this one, and because this is the one. It's coronavirus and distance learning. Yeah. The state superintendent has pushed back schools being closed at least through May 15th. And let's be honest, it's probably for the remainder of the school year. High school students just had their first week of distance learning this past week, and middle and elementary schools start next week. Curious how you think the school system and the board is handling distance learning throughout this, up to this point.
Well, you know, it's really easy to stand on the sidelines and throw rocks. And I've listened to some of the other candidates and a lot of people in the community. And one of the thing that pops into my head most often is there's a lot going on that the school system just isn't communicating. And there's a lot that is coming to a crisis for the school system that they have been able to put off, the technology infrastructure and capacity and equipment and devices in particular. But I think that by and large, the people who are trying to get this pulled together are committed, conscientious, competent, really terrific people. And they are hampered by a lack of equipment, a lack of infrastructure. But, you know, a lot of the complaints in the first couple of weeks, I kept thinking, I know it feels like it's been a month or two. I just wish my vacations for 2 weeks felt as long as those first 2 weeks. And I would like to have seen some things done differently. I would like to have seen the teachers given a little more free rein to work on keeping in touch with their students if they wanted to. I understand the reason that the school system may have said, you know, just don't do anything, because if they could be considered working during those 2 weeks, then at the end of all this, if we did happen to go back to school, these would not have been days off. They would have been days that, you know, count toward the 193 that they're contractually obligated to work. So in that regard, I think that made sense to me. I don't have confirmation that that was the thinking, but, you know, it makes sense to me that you would not want to waste those work days and then have to pay at the end of the year. You know, it's like $3 million a day for every day beyond the contract to keep the teachers working. So that makes sense to me, but this is a theme that I would like to see the school administration step away from, where the central office and the administration tries to work really hard and put a perfect plan together and then unveil it as if it's going to be perfect, which it never is. And you know, that's what they did with redistricting. They had, you know, wait, we're going to unveil something. And then, okay, hurry up and let's decide. And this is, you know, seems to me a lot of what has happened with the online learning. They were hoping to unveil something fully cooked and perfect. And you know, there are going to be bumps. Everybody knows that. But I think it would have been preferable to bring in the teachers a lot sooner and to let there be a little more flexibility about how each individual classroom was going to approach this, because, you know, the teacher in the classroom is the one who knows their classroom best. And every one of our classrooms is different and the student makeup is different. And I think that might have helped, but But I don't really have a lot of complaints about what I have seen firsthand. I think that there's a lot of misinformation and inaccurate assumptions. You know, you hear a lot about how other districts in the state and across the country are doing such a better job or have done so many other things. But, you know, the people that they are pointed to the immediate surroundings like Montgomery and Anne Arundel and PG County are just not quite right about what's going on there. We are not that different from what they're doing. And the people who point to districts that are out in different parts of the country, I mean, you know, Maryland is one of only a few states that does county school systems. So, you know, a lot of people would like to say, oh, well, this school district is doing great. Well, that school district has, you know, 6,000 students, and, you know, it's a completely different animal than a school district with 59,000 students. And that school district is homogeneous. It just, everything is, they're all ready, up and running for, you know, really high quality internet connections and devices and whatever. So, you know, you really can't compare apples to apples. And, you know, I would like to think that the school system will go with the, I think it, Rahm Emanuel was credited with this quote, but I'm sure he got it somewhere else, that you should never let a good crisis go to waste. This is an opportunity for the school system to acquire the devices that it needs. You know, and I also suggested that they lend out the existing devices that were just sitting dormant in the schools. But, you know, people need to understand that our existing inventory is largely held together with, you know, duct tape and bubble gum. And, you know, that's been an ongoing problem with administering online testing and stuff like that, because it's hard to keep a room full of computers going. So this might be a tremendous opportunity to lend those out, the ones that are working, and acquire the new devices that are going to be needed going forward. Because even if when we do go back to in the school buildings classes, there's every reason to believe that this is going to happen again, maybe not for as long a period of time, or, you know, I don't think anybody really knows, but we should be able to be much better set up for the next time, or for just implementing more online learning opportunities, even if the coronavirus doesn't rear its head. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity. Plus, there's an enormous amount of money being saved by having the schools physically closed right now. So I think a lot of the expense that we're going to be incurring by acquiring these devices is actually going to be able to be absorbed by the cost savings of the monies that are not being spent.
That's a good point. I want to give the school system, you know, some credit, because, you know, we've had 4 days of distance learning with the high school students. I haven't heard anything all week and on social media about it. Now, that means it's going well, because if it wasn't, you know, we'd be hearing complaint after complaint after complaint.
An ounce of planning is a pound of success. So
yeah. So I mean, from that just metric, if you will, I'm not hearing that it's a complete and utter disaster this first week. So that's a good thing, and you know, something we should celebrate.
Yes, and it's also high schools, which is where this would be most likely to succeed.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a good thing. And I think there's a lot of data that could be collected if this were just a social experiment, because some kids are going to thrive with online learning. Some kids are going to find out, yeah, I better never pay for an online college class because this is not working for me.
Right.
So this is a really good learning opportunity if we just take advantage of it.
Yep. I agree. All right, let's move on to the next question. And look, I have to ask about redistricting, and you've noted it a couple of times. Now, look, I don't want to get into the decisions made by the board during the last process, but I am interested to know from a past board member your thought about the process and how the process worked or I would think most people think it didn't in certain ways, that the school system undertook and that the board went through to get us where we are with redistricting?
Well, you know, redistricting is, there's an editorial cartoon I still have on my desktop, that it's the third rail of community service. It's, you don't want to touch it, but it's your job and you have to, and you need to do a good job. One, if you don't mind, I would like to just go back to 2017.
Sure.
And, you know, that was, I was not a fan of this process for years. Long time foe of the way that the school system goes about doing redistricting. What they have done for decades is have the, you know, sort of like they did with the, like what I mentioned earlier, they spend a lot of time, months, having the administration put together a plan and then unveil it. And then the board, who is one of their few actually itemized statutory powers that the board has to set attendance areas, gets, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 weeks to review and then make the decisions. And that, and during all that time, it is when the community involvement pieces happen. So it's a totally backward situation. In my view, the board should have the lion's share of the time allotted to working on the plan. And we almost had something closer to what should happen in the 2017 redistricting. We spent a great deal of time doing the thing that was absolutely necessary, which was opening a new elementary school. And in order to do a really good job with that, we needed to take a lot of time. And when we were running out of time, and it would have been a good time to move forward with high schools, we got a start, but it became very clear that we just did not have the time left before decisions have to be made to get the next school year up and running to do a good job. And the board at that time voted to put a pause into the redistricting process and pick it up in the spring after a couple of other decisions and processes had gone through, and work on the high schools then to be effective for the next school year. And then when it came time to do that in the spring, after we formalized the site for the 13th high school and the budget was, you know, on its way to being ready to go, the board voted 4-3 not to proceed, which, you know, I was like, well, I was one who voted to proceed because it needed to be done. But, you know, the people can watch it on video. There were a variety of reasons put forward on why some board members didn't want to go forward.
There's an article in the blog about that as well.
Yeah. So that was a very big disappointment, but it demonstrates what I think the better way to approach this would be. And in my view, the board seated in 2020 should start the process for the 2023 redistricting that will be effective in 2023 in January or February. They should get started, and then they can have a very long period of time that could involve substantive community input that is actually listened to. One of the problems with the theme that the administration runs on, which is they, you know, they do this with the budget, they do it with redistricting, they did it with the learning. They spend so much time putting together the plan they're going to unveil, then everybody's invested in it. And anything that you want to change or tweak, or, you know, people get very invested in all that work they did. And to do all that work without actually bringing in the stakeholders is pretty much backward in my view. But one of the reasons that I was very disappointed about the not going forward with the high school redistricting in early 2018 was that the redistricting to open a new high school is so disruptive, and it touches the entire county. That is a good time to do the big projects and the big redistricting that would seriously alter all attendance areas. That would be the time that we could work on things like making some of the schools into potentially year-round schools. That would be a good time that we would be able to make something closer to a feeder system. You know, and this is a once in a school age generation opportunity, because the last time we opened a high school was in the early 2000s. So if every 20 years, you know, is when you can actually revisit the entire scheme of things, and when things are going to be disrupted anyway, that's the time to do the big disruption. And I just thought this was, last year was not a reasonable time to have a big disruption, because it's not, redistricting is not something you can do incrementally. It's not reasonable to say to a family, well, we're going to move you to this far this time and then this far in 2 years. No, you move people once and then you leave them be as long as possible. And opening a new school is one of the very legitimate reasons to redistrict. Overcapacity issues, that's another.
Sure. All right. You talked about the budget. That's my final question for you. The board this past year sent forward a really big ask in their recommended operating budget to the county. And if I remember correctly, some board members themselves admitted they knew it wouldn't be fully funded. Now, with the financial impact of coronavirus outbreak, you know, we can pretty well bet that funding is going to be limited next year. Matter of fact, we should find out on Monday what that number is when the county executive presents it to the county council, presents his operating budget to the county council. What are your thoughts on the school budget, and how might the board deal with potentially less funding next year, and maybe even beyond that, depending on how long this financial impact hits the county, the state, and the nation?
Well, I think that's the way you phrase that is a very good way of looking at it. And for me, I think I would still start with the, a baseline philosophy. Yes, everything is upside down. We're going to have to start mentally from scratch on how we're going to go forward. But for years and years, decades, there was a sort of a dance that the school system and the county administration did, where the superintendent and the county executive would meet. The county executive would let the superintendent know what he was likely going to give to the school system, and then the superintendent would put together a budget that basically was that amount. And then, everything went smoothly. It looked like everything was hunky-dory. And when there's plenty of money, it can be hunky-dory. But then what would happen is when parents and students and teachers and, administrators would say, well, we need to add this program or this, we need to spend this money. And the school system would say, well, we just don't have the funding for that. And then the county would say, but we gave you everything you asked for. And, this little dance would continue. And I have been, and I know this is not popular among a very large segment of even my district, D5. The statute says the school board is supposed to submit a budget that fills the needs of the school system. And I think that's basically what we've done the last few years, and what they tried to do this year. The school board told the superintendent to put together a budget that accurately reflects what it would cost to do the programs and the services that the community is demanding, and he did. Now, that somehow became the school system is asking for this money. No. That first step is the superintendent telling the school board what it would cost to do all the things they said they wanted to know how much it would cost. And then they have to go through and say, well, realistically, these are the amounts that we really need to do the basics. And these are the amounts that would be really important to get. But if we don't get it, we could probably live without. And then these are the things that would be nice to have. And then they put together the budget that they're going to submit to the county, which, in my view, should be, these are the things we absolutely have to have. And these are the things that we really should have, but if we can't have them, we'll figure something out. Those items should go to the county no matter what. And based on what the, you know, the Spending Affordability Committee has put out and the county has said that they think they're going to be able to provide, then they can add in the sort of a la carte menu. But I think that it's important that they do provide an accurate representation of what the school system's needs are. Otherwise, how does the community know that the school system is underfunded? How does the county know what they're going to need? And you know, I know there are people who think there's a lot of waste. There has been waste in the past when I first got on the board, and I would say, well, you know, how can we do this? And they would say, sure. I would say, well, where would that money come from? Because, you know, it's a budget. It should have identifiable sources of funding. Oh, it's in there. So I used to call it the Prego budget. Oh, it's in there. Well, you know, it's not supposed to just be in there. You're supposed to know exactly where everything is coming from and everything is going. And so that was a frustration, but it worked for a long time because they had plenty of money to sock away in different parts of the budget. And, you know, as we know that the health fund deficit is a major problem, but that there was a time just a few years ago, maybe seven, that there was a $23 million surplus in that fund. And then that money just, you know, was used to fund other stuff and eventually became a deficit. But philosophically, I believe that the school system is supposed to provide accurate information about what it needs. And like in this case, where this county has said they expect to have 30 something million above what they had last year. And, you know, folks argue that the school system shouldn't expect to get all of that. Well, you know, that number is basically a number that is determined by the county executive, you know, based on projections and stuff. And it's smart for the county executive to underestimate what revenues are likely to be. I mean, we certainly don't want a county executive who's overestimating and then end up short at the end of the year. But then during the course of the year, you know, if you look back historically, there's, you know, quite a lot, tens of millions of dollars more in revenue than was initially projected, which doesn't go through the budgeting process. So, you know, there could be more. That's just one minor issue. But last year, in Dr. Ball's first budget, he gave substantial increases to many of the other departments beyond what the school system received. And I'm not saying they didn't need it, but they got big increases last year. So maybe it's the school system's turn this year to get a little more than the minimum that is necessary or minimum plus. Maybe it's the school system's turn to get, you know, a little bit extra to help start getting caught up. I think it would be, you know, over the last 10 years, going through figuring out the school system is underfunded by probably something in the $25 to $35 million a year range. If we wanted to do the things that we think we want to do, the $50 million above ask includes, you know, paying off the deficit. So, you know, we always seem to circle in on that $30 something million, and I do not have a problem with the school system asking for it. The school system's job is to advocate for the students and the school system. And one other quick thing is that if somebody were to go through the budget, the school system's budget, and take out all of the community things that are done that could probably be better identified as things under the social services and health department and other agencies within the government that are done through the school system, they're all important. They just probably shouldn't be coming out of the K-12 budget, but it makes sense to provide the services through the school system because that's where the kids are. But there are tens of millions of dollars in expenses that could truly be identified as community expenses that are not direct K through 12 education. So the school system gets this, you know, rap that they are spending, you know, over 50% of the county's budget, but they're also spending money that should be identified as coming from the county for social services.
That's a very good point.
Oh, thank you.
Well, look, Sandy, those are my three questions for you. You survived. Good job. Do you have any final things you want to let the listeners know?
Well, just, I know that this is weird. This whole situation that we're all in is very disconcerting. I hope that people will fill out their in-the-mail ballots and send them in. I hope that they will research candidates. I'm running this time because there is a crisis situation that the next board needs to be able to walk in and be ready to deal with. The learning curve is a very long learning curve. The stuff that is going on right now that the school system is trying to plan around includes all of the laws and the regulations and, you know, from the federal and the state level, and the way that the public school system's management is set up, you know, in the statutory scheme of the state is very complicated. And it's not the people who have these ideas that they're going to walk in and start doing, you know, reviewing the or handling the RFPs and the budget, and they're going to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. You know, I think that's great. A new blood, new fresh ideas, those are wonderful things. And that's what I was hoping that the new board in 2018 was going to have time to do before this other stuff all hit the fan. This next board really needs to have some solid experience in Howard County, in Maryland, in a 59,000 student school system with relationships with, and I think relatively good relationships with, all of the different parties involved. And, you know, whose only commitment is to public education and public education in Howard County. And, you know, for D5, there are, you know, I mean, Dr. Liu is, her skill set would be very helpful in a couple of years, but right now the person who comes in needs to be able to hit these other crisis points immediately. I think that's me.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Cindy, for joining me on the show today. I really appreciate it, and I wish you a lot of luck in the upcoming primary.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for giving me so much time to just finish my thoughts. It's so unusual in a forum, and this was great.
It is my pleasure. A final note to the listeners, the primary election date for the Board of Ed has been moved back to June 2nd because of the coronavirus outbreak. Information is being released and has been released from the State Board of Elections. And I will continue to inform you all right up until and even beyond June 2nd. So that's it. That's all I've got today, folks. I hope you all have a wonderful day. And this is Scotty signing out.